A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
I've been thinking about this thing Daniel mentioned in his prompt. The idea that there's a whole hidden layer of airport knowledge that parents just absorb somehow, and nobody tells you about it until you're standing there holding a baby and a boarding pass and realizing you have no idea what happens next.
It's institutional knowledge in its purest form, the stuff that's never written down because everyone who's done it once just knows it. And airports are the perfect case study because they combine high stakes, time pressure, and about 40 unwritten rules per square meter.
Here's what Daniel actually wrote. He said, "My wife and I are about to take our first international trip with our son Ezra, who's now 13 months old. A couple of weeks ago, my wife sent in a prompt about surviving the long-haul flight itself, how to keep a baby reasonably happy, and avoid becoming the family. Everyone on the plane remembers for the wrong reasons." What I'd love to focus on in this episode is everything that happens before you even buckle your seatbelt.
That's the right split. The flight and the airport are two completely different problems.
He says, "If you've never traveled through an airport with a baby, it feels like there's a whole hidden layer of knowledge that everyone else somehow absorbed. Before we had kids, I never paid any attention to how families navigated airports, so now I'm discovering there are dozens of tiny practical questions I've never had to think about. For example, what actually happens with the stroller? Can you take it all the way to the gate? Does it count as carry-on? If it does go in the cabin, what's the etiquette around trying to find space for it in the overhead bins? If it gets gate-checked, what should you expect?"
4 questions, and we haven't even left the curb yet.
He's got more. He says, more broadly, what changes once you arrive at the airport with a 1-year-old? How does security screening work when you're carrying a baby? A stroller, baby food, milk, or other essentials? Is passport control any different? Are there little pieces of airport etiquette, shortcuts, or common mistakes that first-time parents only discover the hard way?
The universal stuff, not airline-specific rules.
Right. He says, "I'm not looking for a country-by-country guide or airline-specific rules, since I know those vary. I'm more interested in the universal someone should have told us, this advice. The invisible parts of the airport experience that only become obvious once you're traveling with the child. Basically, if you were sending a first-time traveling family off on their maiden international adventure with a toddler, what practical wisdom would you want them to know before they even get to the departure gate?"
That's a great prompt, and the framing is exactly right. There's this whole parallel airport that exists for parents, and you don't see it until you're in it.
So today we're building that manual, the invisible airport layer from curb to gate. And I want to start with the thing Daniel led with, because it's probably the first decision you make, and it shapes everything downstream.
The stroller.
The stroller decision tree. And the key insight here, the thing that took me an embarrassingly long time to figure out, is that your stroller isn't just a stroller in the airport. It's your vehicle. It's the thing that lets you move fast, carry your stuff, and contain the baby. The choice of stroller determines literally everything about how you move through the building.
And this is where a lot of first-timers make the classic mistake. They bring the full-size travel system, the big one with the bassinet attachment and the cup holders and the undercarriage that could carry a small refrigerator. And it's a dream on smooth pavement, but the moment you're trying to fold it at the door of a plane while 200 people are waiting behind you, it becomes your worst enemy.
I've watched this happen. It's like watching someone try to fold a tent in a wind tunnel.
So, the decision tree. You've basically got 3 categories. The umbrella stroller, tiny, folds to nothing, weighs about as much as a bag of groceries. The full-size stroller, substantial, comfortable, lots of storage. And the travel system. The full-size stroller plus the infant car seat that clicks into it.
For a 13-month-old like Ezra, the travel system car seat attachment is probably irrelevant at this point. He's out of the infant bucket.
Right, so you're really choosing between umbrella and full size. And here's the thing. The umbrella stroller is the secret weapon of experienced traveling parents. It folds small enough to fit in an overhead bin on most planes. That gives you options.
Let's walk through what actually happens. You arrive at the airport with your stroller and your baby. You check your luggage at the counter. And then? This is the part Daniel was asking about. You keep the stroller with you. You push it right through the airport, all the way to the gate.
All the way to the door of the plane. That's the universal rule across pretty much every airline. The stroller goes with you to the gate. You don't have to check it at the ticket counter.
And this is the first misconception to knock down. Strollers don't count as carry-on baggage. They're a separate category entirely. Some airlines call them a personal item. Some call them an assistive device. The terminology varies, but the outcome is the same. You get your carry-on bag, your personal item, and your stroller. The stroller doesn't eat into your allowance.
Neither does the car seat, by the way. Car seats can be checked for free or gate checked for free. They don't count against your baggage allowance either. And neither does the baby. The baby isn't a carry-on item, despite what some gate agents might jokingly suggest.
The baby is carry-on myth. Daniel didn't ask about that one, but it's worth saying. You can bring a diaper bag, a stroller, and a car seat in addition to your own carry-on. The baby is a person, not luggage.
So you've pushed the stroller to the gate. Now what? This is where gate checking comes in, and it's the part that confuses people the most. Here's how it works. You go to the gate agent before boarding starts. Before, not during, and you tell them you want to gate check the stroller. They print a tag, you attach it to the stroller, and then you keep the stroller with you until you're at the door of the plane.
The door of the plane. Not the gate door. The actual aircraft door. You push it down the jet bridge.
Yes. And then right at the plane door, you fold the stroller and hand it to the crew. They take it down to the hold. And here's the critical detail that nobody tells you. Gate-checked items come back on the jet bridge when you land. Not the baggage carousel. You walk off the plane, you wait on the jet bridge for maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and your stroller appears. You unfold it, put the baby in, and you're moving again.
This is the single most important piece of stroller logistics right here. You get it back immediately. You don't have to carry a 13-month-old through the arrivals hall, through passport control, through baggage claim. You have wheels the moment you step off the plane.
Unless something goes wrong. Occasionally, and this is rare, but it happens, the stroller gets sent to the baggage carousel by mistake. Always confirm with the crew when you hand it over. Say the words, jet bridge delivery, so there's no ambiguity.
Now, Daniel asked specifically about the overhead bin scenario. What if the stroller folds small enough to go in the cabin?
If it fits in the overhead bin, you can bring it on board. The umbrella strollers almost always fit. Some of the compact travel strollers fit too. But this is where the etiquette gets brutal.
Overhead bin space is the most contested real estate in aviation. People have gone to war over less.
The unwritten rule is this. If you're boarding early, and families usually do, you can claim bin space for the stroller. But you have to be prepared for someone to ask you to move it. And honestly, if the flight is full and bin space is tight, the right move is to gate check it even if it fits. The stroller can handle the hold. Someone's carry-on with their laptop and medication can't.
This is a good general principle. The stroller is durable. Gate checking it isn't a failure. It's the normal, expected thing. Keeping it in the cabin is a bonus, not the default.
And if you do gate check it, here's the hidden trick Daniel was fishing for. Ask the gate agent for a plastic bag to cover the stroller. Most airlines have them. They're basically giant clear plastic bags, but they almost never offer them unless you ask. The bag keeps the stroller clean, prevents straps from getting caught on things, and gives you a little protection against rain if it sits on the tarmac for a few minutes.
I didn't know about the plastic bag thing until embarrassingly recently.
Most people don't. It's one of those things that only exists if you ask for it, like the family lane at security, but we'll get to that.
Before we leave strollers, there's one more thing. The diaper bag strategy. This is the bag you never, ever gate check. It stays with you under the seat in front of you. It's your survival kit for the flight. Diapers, wipes, change of clothes, food, comfort item. Everything else in your life can go in the overhead bin or the hold. The diaper bag is non-negotiable.
And this connects to the bigger mistake we should flag early. Overpacking. The number one rookie error is arriving at the airport with too much stuff. You pack like you're going to be stranded for 3 days instead of sitting in a metal tube for a few hours. Every extra bag is a burden you'll regret by the time you reach gate 42. The airport is a marathon, and you're carrying a baby.
The stroller helps with this, actually. One of the underrated benefits of having a stroller in the airport is that you can hang bags off the handles. It becomes a cargo vehicle. But the discipline is still, pack the diaper bag like a survival kit, not a nursery.
So that's the stroller. You've got your vehicle, you know how gate checking works, you know about the plastic bag, you know the diaper bag stays with you. Now you're walking into the terminal and you see the security checkpoint ahead. And this is the part that makes every first-time parent's heart rate double.
Security with a baby is the thing I see people most anxious about, and the anxiety comes from not knowing what the rules actually are.
Let's start with the big one, because it's the rule that saves parents from dumping $40 worth of formula down the drain. Formula, breast milk, and juice for babies are exempt from the 3-1-1 liquids rule. You can bring them in quantities larger than 3.4 ounces. They're explicitly allowed.
This isn't a loophole. This is written into the TSA rules.
It's written in, but, and this is the crucial part, you must declare them. You take them out of your bag, you put them in a separate bin, and you tell the officer at the start of the line, I have formula and baby food. They'll screen them separately. They might swab them or run them through additional testing. But they won't make you throw them away.
The declaration part matters. If you leave them buried in your bag and they show up on the x-ray, you're going to have a longer conversation than you want.
Yes, separate bin declared up front. That's the formula rule. Now, the stroller through security, this is the other thing that trips people up, the stroller goes through the x-ray machine. You fold it, you put it on the belt, it gets scanned. But the baby doesn't go through the x-ray machine.
I feel like that should go without saying.
You'd think. But the actual rule is that the baby must be carried through the metal detector in your arms. You hold the baby, you walk through. The stroller goes on the belt. If the baby is in a carrier or a sling, you still walk through the metal detector with the baby on you. They won't ask you to remove the carrier.
And here's a hidden trick I've seen experienced parents use. If you're carrying the baby, ask for a pat down instead of going through the body scanner. The body scanner requires you to stand still with your arms up, and that's basically impossible with a squirming 13-month-old. A pat down takes an extra 90 seconds, but it's less stressful for everyone.
That's a good one, and it's your right to request it. They can't force you through the scanner if you ask for a pat-down instead. The other thing to know is that many airports, most major international airports, have a dedicated family lane at security. It's not always marked. Sometimes it's just the lane at the far end that's wider, or the one with more space before the conveyor belt. But if you don't see it, ask. Walk up to any staff member and say, "Is there a family lane?" They'll point you to it.
The family lane is the closest thing airports have to a secret shortcut. It exists, it works, and it's almost never advertised. You just have to know to ask.
And it's not just security. Passport control often has the same thing, a family or priority lane. Again, look for the signs, or just ask. Border agents don't want to deal with a crying baby any more than you want your baby to be crying. They'll often wave families through faster.
Which brings us to passport control. Daniel asked if it's any different with a one-year-old. The process is the same. You hand over the passports, they check them, they wave you through. But the etiquette and the preparation are different.
The baby needs a passport. That's the first thing. Even a newborn needs their own passport for international travel. They can't be listed on the parents' passports anymore in most countries. So Ezra has his own passport, and you need to have it ready, in your hand, with yours.
The second thing, and this is the one that catches people out. Some countries require both parents to be present at passport control if you're traveling with a child. Or if only one parent is traveling, they may require a notarized consent letter from the absent parent.
This isn't universal, but it's common enough that you need to check. Canada requires it. South Africa requires it. Many European countries will ask for it if you're a single parent traveling alone with a child. The letter basically says, I, the other parent, consent to this travel. It needs to be notarized, and you need to carry it with you.
Even if your destination doesn't technically require it, having the letter is a good idea. Border agents have broad discretion, and if something looks unusual to them, they can ask. Better to have the letter and not need it than to be pulled aside for questioning while your baby melts down.
The other thing about passport control, and this is more etiquette than rule, is that families with babies are often given a kind of unofficial priority. If an agent sees you with a screaming toddler, they're not going to make you wait. But the flip side is that you should have your documents ready. Don't be the family that gets to the front of the line and then starts digging through 3 bags looking for the baby's passport. That's how you burn through goodwill.
The universal principle here is, be the organized family, have a document pouch, passports, boarding passes, consent letter if you need it, all in one place, accessible with one hand, because the other hand is holding a baby.
Let's talk about the pre-boarding question, because this is the one where the conventional wisdom is actually wrong. Airlines offer pre-boarding for families with small children. They call you up before everyone else. And every first-time parent thinks, great, we'll get settled, we'll have time to organize. But pre-boarding is a trap.
This is my favorite counterintuitive airport rule. Boarding early means more time on the plane, and more time on the plane with a restless one-year-old isn't a gift. It's a penalty.
The plane is the worst environment for a toddler. It's cramped, it's loud, it's unfamiliar, and they can't move. Every minute you spend on the plane before takeoff is a minute your baby is burning through their limited patience reserves. The pro move, and this is something experienced traveling parents do, is divide and conquer. One parent boards early with the bags. They get the overhead bin space sorted, they set up the seat area, they get the diaper bag positioned. The other parent stays in the terminal with the baby until the absolute last minute.
Maximize the time the baby has room to move. Let them crawl, let them walk, let them burn energy in the gate area. Then board when they call final boarding. The baby gets on the plane, the seat is ready, the bags are stowed, and you're airborne before they have time to get restless.
This requires 2 adults, obviously. If you're traveling solo with a baby, you don't have this option. But if you're traveling as a couple, and Daniel and Hannah are, this is the single best tactical move you can make. It transforms the boarding experience.
And it connects to the broader philosophy here. The airport is a system designed for solo adults moving fast. A one-year-old breaks every assumption in that design. The work of traveling with a baby is translating your family into the airport system. Every trick we've talked about, the stroller logistics, the security rules, the family lane, the late boarding, they're all translations. They're ways of fitting a family into a machine that wasn't built for one.
That's the aha moment, right? Once you see the airport as a system with rules you can learn, it stops being intimidating and starts being navigable. The hidden knowledge isn't hidden because someone is keeping it from you. It's hidden because you've never had to look for it before.
So let's distill this into the 5 rules you can actually take with you. The stuff Daniel was asking for. The someone should have told us this list.
Rule 1, less is more. Pack the diaper bag like a survival kit, not a nursery. You need diapers, wipes, a change of clothes for the baby, a change of shirt for you, because spills happen, food, and 1 comfort item. Everything else is negotiable. The airport sells things. The destination sells things. You aren't traveling to the moon.
Rule 2, ask for help. Airport staff are trained to assist families. Ask for the family lane. Ask for the stroller bag. Ask for help with the car seat. The worst they can say is no, and they almost never do. The hidden infrastructure of the airport. The plastic bags. The family lanes. The priority lines. It only activates if you ask.
Rule 3, divide and conquer. Split responsibilities with your partner. One person handles the baby, the other handles the bags. Trying to do both alone is how you end up crying in the security line. And I don't mean the baby.
I've seen grown adults weep at the x-ray machine. It's not a good look.
Rule 4. Arrive early, board late. Give yourself extra time at the airport. More than you think you need, because everything takes longer with a baby. But use the last-minute boarding strategy to minimize time on the plane. The airport is stressful but spacious. The plane is stressful and cramped. Maximize the former, minimize the latter.
And rule 5. Expect the unexpected. No matter how much you plan, something will go wrong. The stroller will get sent to the wrong carousel. The baby will have a blowout in the security line. The formula will spill. The goal isn't a perfect trip. The goal is getting to the gate with your sanity intact and your family still speaking to each other.
That last one is the most important. The parents who have the worst time are the ones who expected everything to go smoothly. The parents who roll with it, who treat the chaos as part of the adventure, they're the ones who get to the other side and think, okay, that wasn't so bad.
Now, the Steel Man. Someone listening to this might say, you've just described a bunch of workarounds for a system that should be more accommodating in the first place. The fact that parents need hidden knowledge to navigate airports is a design failure, not a life hack. Why should families have to learn secret rules just to get through a building?
That's fair. Airports could absolutely do more. Better signage for family lanes, clearer information about stroller rules, more space at security for parents with babies. The fact that you have to ask for things that should be offered is a real frustration. But the system is what it is today, and Daniel's flight is happening now, not after some hypothetical redesign. Knowing the hidden rules doesn't fix the system, but it gets you through it.
And the hidden knowledge keeps evolving. Ezra is 13 months now. In a year, you'll be 2. Walking, talking, with opinions about everything. The airport experience changes again. Then school age, then the years where they can handle their own boarding pass. Every life stage has its own hidden lair.
Which is actually our open question for listeners. What's the one piece of airport wisdom you wish someone had told you before your first trip with a baby? The thing you only learned by getting it wrong. Send it in. We might do a follow-up episode, because I suspect the collective knowledge out there is bigger than anything we could cover in 25 minutes.
If this episode saved you from a meltdown in security, leave a review and tell us your story. We genuinely want to hear it.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for making this show happen.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Send your own prompts to show at myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon. Safe travels, Daniel and Hannah. You've got this.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.